Well, I like what you did with the place. So if you don't know my story, my name is Lou. I've been a pastor here for the past 6 years. And my wife and I, Allie, we just left to start a brand new church over in the town of Babylon. So if you know anybody that needs a church in the town of Babylon, just send them our way. So to start out this morning, I want you to think of a time when you've really blown it. You've really blown it. I was talking to my wife about this. I was like, Allie, can you think of a time when I've really blown it? She was like, yes. but right away, so it makes me think of this time where there was one year, a couple years ago, where I wanted to do something big for my wife. So in the summer, our anniversary, Allie's birthday, and Mother's Day all fall around the same time. So it's like, bam, I get hit with three big holidays at once, you know? So one year I'm like, okay, this year I'm going to smack it out of the park. I'm going to combine all three of those holidays, mistake number one. And I'm just going to get one big gift. So I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about what's going to be helpful for her. And I'm super excited. I went out to Best Buy. I even brought my daughter in. I was like, look, we're going to get for mommy and whatever. So I go through this whole big process. Then I wrap it up in this like real nice wrapping paper. And I put it in the living room, which is like the room you see right when you come out of our bedroom. So when she wakes up in the morning, she'll see this big box all wrapped. It'll be so exciting. And sure enough, the moment comes where she wakes up and it's that day. And I say, now look, you might be a little upset when you see this because it's really expensive, but I want you to know that I'm combining your birthday and anniversary and Mother's Day. It's just going to be one big thing. So, you know, that's why it's going to be so much money. And she's, you know, I'm really building the excitement here. And she opens it up and she sees this brand new vacuum cleaner. She opens it and she's like, oh, okay. And then I realized that I had messed up pretty significantly. But I thought it would be helpful, you know, but apparently it's not the right line of logic. So anyway, think of a time that you've blown it, right? Or we might say, think of a time when you needed mercy. A time when you needed mercy. Maybe for you, it's a time when you did something wrong intentionally. Maybe you were caught red-handed. Maybe you had something of somebody else's and it broke. But a time when you needed mercy, a time when you had wronged someone. What I want you to think about is how natural it is for us when we wrong someone to ask for mercy. It's our first instinct. Think about it. The last time you did something wrong, did you just stand there and ask for, you know, punishment to the full extent of the law? No. It's like immediately, as soon as we're caught, as soon as you're caught with your hand in the cookie jar, it's like, oh, wait a minute. And we've got excuses. We craft our explanations. But it is just totally natural for us to instinctively ask for mercy. That's how we work. Right? But when the shoe is on the other foot, when you've been wronged, when we've been wronged, someone's taken something of yours, when someone hurts you, intentionally or unintentionally, our gut response is never mercy. I'm not saying we never show mercy, but you have to bring yourself to that place, right? We naturally look for judgment. We look for justice for the other person, revenge, retaliation. Like if I were to hit you in the nose, you know, when you hit right in the nose and it's like your whole face just starts crying and it's just whatever, it's horrible. When that happens to me, my first instinct is never, let me show mercy to this person. I wonder why they did that, right? It's anger immediately, and I have to take myself from that place to a place of mercy. Hopefully, that's where I end, right? But it's never natural. So the question then is, why? How is it that we are so slow to give what we are so quick to need? How can it be so natural to want mercy and so unnatural to give it? What is it? Why? Now, if you're familiar with the Bible, if you're familiar with Jesus, the New Testament, you probably know that Jesus loved to tell stories. And I love that because I love stories, but he also takes these really abstract principles and he makes them concrete. And he kind of runs into this situation where they're dealing with mercy, dealing with forgiveness, and he throws one of these stories down for them so that they could help them understand. If you want to follow along today, there's Bibles right under the chairs in front of you. It's on page 1531, but I'll also have them up on these beautiful screens up here. The verses will be there. So here's what's going on. Jesus is hanging out with his best friends, those 12 guys, his closest followers. We call them the disciples. We later started calling them the apostles. But he's with one of them, specifically Peter. Peter is the one who always has something to say. He's always got a question. He often speaks on behalf of the whole group. And Jesus had just gone over how to handle conflict, how to handle when someone has wronged you. And he kind of ends at this place of forgiveness. And right away, this is why I love Peter. Right away, Peter's got a question. He needs some clarification. He says, okay, Jesus, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? I love it. It gets real practical. Seven? Seven times? Higher? Lower? Where do we go from there? And if you know the story, you know Jesus replies. He says, not seven times, Peter, but 77 times, or your translation might say 7 times 70 times. The reason there is because the original language in Greek is not perfectly clear. It's kind of hard to translate ancient Greek to numbers. So we don't know exactly. But the idea here is that back then, the number 7 had this idea of completeness or wholeness. And so when Peter is suggesting 7 times, that's actually a pretty generous guess. It's a pretty generous, suggestion to say, okay, 7, that's like most of the time. And Jesus is saying, no, Peter, you don't get it. Not most of the time, but I want you to make this a lifestyle. Not just 7 times, but 77 times or 7 times 70 times. And if we're going to get practical here like Peter, here's what I need you to do. I need you to stop for a minute and do some soul searching. Like, really think about those people in your life that you don't like to talk about. You know, those people that you kind of intentionally avoid. You notice them in a room, you put your head down, pretend you never saw them, and go around. The people who, when their number comes up on your caller ID, you ignore it. People you don't want to talk to. If it's late at night and you're relaxing and you've got Netflix on, you're watching Dancing with the Stars or whatever you watch, and their name comes up, it's like, no, I don't want to talk about that person. Who are the people in your life that you have built a wall between? And we have to go into this passage with those people in mind. Otherwise, this passage here, this idea of mercy, forgiveness, it's really easy and nice to talk about. But when it hits home, when it comes to the people that we're dealing with, it doesn't always translate so smoothly. So keep those people, like Peter, keep them in the back of your mind if we're going to allow this to speak to our life situations. And here's what Jesus says. Here's how the story starts out. He says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven. He says, therefore, to connect his response with this story. This is an explanation here. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king, who usually represents God in these stories, who wants to settle accounts with his servants. Now, kings back then had servants probably more like what we would consider managers today. Kings would have lots of riches, lots of money, and they would entrust a ton of their things to people under them, and those people were responsible for them. So he wants to settle his accounts. He wants to get his money back, call in all the money that's been out there. He calls somebody in, the first person we meet. It says, as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Now, I don't know how many of your bags of gold you've loaned out, but the idea here is that it's a lot of money. The original word in the Greek language for bags of gold, it's actually the word talents. A talent, here's what you need to know. A talent is the largest unit of currency. It was the largest unit of currency at that time. And the number 10,000 was the largest single digit that they had. So Jesus takes the largest digit and the largest unit of currency, puts them together. One commentator wrote, I literally read this in the commentary, it said, it's as if Jesus comes to them and says, all right, a man owes a king a gazillion dollars, right? The picture that's being painted here is of a reckless fool. It's not somebody who's fallen on hard times, or someone who's made a mistake, or a few mistakes, or even has a habit of making bad mistakes. This is somebody who has just been utterly reckless with all of this money that the king has trusted to him. A ton of money. And he's blown it. Foolishness. When I was in college, I was really fortunate. My parents gave me a car, and I had it as a freshman, which was kind of rare. And there was this guy that I went to school with. His name was Lance. And Lance really liked this girl. We all knew Lance was trying to get this girl to go out on a date for him, go on a date with him. Well, probably for him, but go on a date with him. And eventually she agrees, and they continue to date for a month. And he comes up to me, and he says, Lou, I'm taking my girlfriend out for our 1 month anniversary. I'm like, ooh, big deal, right? And he says, can I borrow your car so I could take him out? Now, I had this 1997 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and it was my favorite thing in the world, right? It was like my treasure. And you know, I'm kind of hesitating. I didn't really want to give it to him, but eventually I decided, all right, fine, take the car. So I give him the keys, and the way that the campus was set up, the freshmen had to park far away from the dorms in the freshman lot. They had to walk. So it was not uncommon for me to not see my car for several days. Well, like 3 or 4 days later, Lance comes back up to me and with a smile on his face, and he's got my keys, and he's like, hey, here's your car. And he gives me the keys and goes, oh, one thing. One thing. Your car is really, really dirty. Like the carpets are soaked in mud. The outside is covered in mud. You see, I took my girlfriend out on Friday, but then Saturday, a bunch of us in the dorm, we decided to go mudding up on Candler's Mountain. And while we were up there, the car, it got stuck in a pit. So I was going to call you, but I thought that you'd probably be annoyed. So I called one of my other friends, and we tied a rope to it, and he was able to yank it out with his car. So it's fine, but it's muddy, and the inside, the carpets are just soaked in mud. So I'll take care of it for you, though. I'll clean it. And he gives me his keys, my keys. And I didn't even know what to feel. It was like, where do I start being angry? So I didn't know what to say. I actually just kind of took the keys. I said, okay. And I walked away. And later on, I came back and articulated my emotions. But in the moment, I had no idea what to say. It was like reckless irresponsibility. Here's something I trusted you with, and you took it and just treated it like it meant nothing. The kind of feeling you get about that guy is the kind of feeling that Jesus' listeners get about this man who owes 10,000 talents. It's not like, oh, poor guy, he owes a lot of money. It's like, how do you do that? How do you lose that much money? Reckless irresponsibility. So, since, Jesus goes on, he says, since the man was not able to pay, obviously, the master ordered he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. This isn't harsh. This is completely reasonable. In fact, it's nice. What he could have done is just had the man thrown in prison for what he did. But instead, he sells him off and figures he can at least get some of the money, or at least that's what he plans to do. It says, at this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Remember these words. He says, be patient with me, and I will pay back everything. Now, before you go feeling bad for this guy, that statement just reinforces his foolishness. He does not need patience from the king. He does not need time. He needs to win the lottery, right? He owes an incredible amount of money. There is no way he's ever going to pay it back. It's a ridiculous request. But he's begging. And here's where the story turns. It says, the servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. The normal response would have been to have him thrown in prison. The reasonable thing to do might have been to let him try and pay it off, sell him off. But instead, think about it, he goes above and beyond the man's request. He requested to be able to pay it back, and the king cancels it. He says, no, don't. He credits 10,000 talents to this man's account. It's crazy. And it's not like the people listening to the story, the people that Jesus is speaking to, it's not like they're like, wow, that was so cool. They would be like, why? Why? It would be like me telling you that after Lance came to me with my dirty car, if I said, no, Lance, I'll clean it, and then I want you to have it. You're like, what? What's wrong with you? It's not this feeling of relief or even excitement. It's just kind of weird. It would have thrown them off. But the key word here is the word pity. It says the master took pity on him. Now, about you, I don't know how you feel about this word pity, but when I think pity, I kind of think pathetic. You know, like if I'm going to have pity on someone, it's like, well, you're helpless, fine, you know, or I'll just let you off the hook. But it's not. The word here in the original language has this idea of compassion, of love, of affection even. And here we start to see what's going on in the mind of the king when he takes pity on him. There's no why. It's just, it's the kind of king that he is. So, this main character here, this man, who just owed all this money, he's on top of the world, right? Yeah, or at least you think he is. He's just had 10,000 talents credited to his account, 10,000 bags of gold or whatever, and he's thrilled. He's walking home. Now he's going to go tell his wife. He's going to tell his kids. You know that the wife is at home just like praying that he doesn't get thrown in prison, or maybe she doesn't even know if he's going to come back alive because he owes this king so much money, and now he's got to go answer for it. But now the man doesn't owe anything, doesn't owe the king anything, and he's walking back, and he's got great news for his wife. If it's me, I like to get really creative with the way that I tell my wife good news. You know, I think of how I'm going to phrase it because we're both going to be so happy and we're going to celebrate it together. We thought we were going to have to do the Dave Ramsey debt-free snowball, but now we don't have to do that because everything's been forgiven, right? So he's on his way home, but before he has a chance to get home and tell his wife the good news, he runs into somebody. He runs into a fellow servant. It says, but when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. Not 100 talents, 100 silver coins. This would probably be a few days' wages. So it's not a tiny amount of money. It's a significant amount of money, but it's nothing compared to 10,000 talents. So he looks at the guy, he grabs him, and he began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him. Remember these words? Be patient with me, and I will pay it back. And in that moment, it clicks, and he's like, oh, that's right. 10 minutes ago, I was just saying the same exact thing. Let me show this guy some mercy, especially since I was just given 10,000 bags of gold. I could spare a couple silver coins. But it doesn't click. Instead, He refuses. He went off and he had the man thrown into prison until he could pay his debt. He had been given mercy, but he gives justice. He gives judgment. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged. They witnessed this. He did it out in plain sight. They went and they told their master everything that had happened. Then the master, the king, called the servant in. He said, "You wicked servant, I canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me to." Here's our punchline. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? Now, he doesn't say, shouldn't you have forgiven him? He doesn't even say, canceled the debt. He says, shown mercy. Shown mercy. Now, similar to that word pity, mercy for me had kind of an interesting definition. Maybe it's like this for you too. I was introduced to the word mercy by my sister, my older sister. It was in a game we played called Mercy, where she'd say, "Put out your hands." And then I would go, "Okay." And she'd say, "All right." And she would literally just try and twist my hands as far back as she could until I yelled mercy, right? That's mercy. So for me, mercy was, it's not totally her fault, but it is. Mercy for me is this idea of just withholding punishment. So when I think of God showing mercy, I just think like, okay, just don't punish me. Just let me go. But the word mercy here, the Hebrew equivalent for the word mercy is a word we've spoken about here before. It's the word hesed. A lot of Bible scholars would say that this is the word that best characterizes God. So to show mercy, let this redefine mercy for you. Here's the definition. It says, mercy is the emotional response and resulting action after encountering the affliction of another. It's feeling and then acting. It's putting yourself in the shoes of the other person to try and feel what they feel and then acting based on what you feel. It's as if the king was saying, I looked at you and I saw you begging for your wife and begging for the future of your children, and I set aside your fault. I set aside how you got to that position. And even though I'm a king and I live in a palace and I owe nobody anything and I don't know what it feels like to be in debt and I've got all the riches I could ever imagine, I stopped, I looked at you, and I felt for you. I felt what you were feeling. So I forgave your debt. Shouldn't you have done the same thing? Shouldn't you have listened to the man who was begging you, like taken a walk in his shoes and thought, what's it like to owe somebody something? If there's anybody who should know what that feels like, it's you. But he doesn't. He doesn't show mercy. Why? Why is it that we're so slow to show what we're so quick to need? I think it comes down to two quick things. I just hinted at the first one. It's that we're blind. We're blind. Blind to our lack of mercy. You know, I think it's interesting that Jesus has the other people notice what the man does, right? Like, there's universal outrage among these people because they know if anyone should be able to know what it feels like to owe a debt like that, it should be that man. If anybody should naturally show mercy, it should be that guy because he was just in that position. But he doesn't. He doesn't see it. And so he does it in plain sight. We are blind to our lack of mercy. Think about this. Do you only get angry about things that you've never done? Or do we hold people to a standard that we break ourselves? Right? In fact, research has shown that we tend to get angrier with people when they do things to us that we are struggling with ourselves. even though it should be the opposite. Even though we should look at people and say, I know what it feels like to struggle with that. I'm going to let this guy off the hook. We don't. We tend to get angrier. We are blind to our lack of mercy. We're also blind to the situations of other people, to what other people are going through. We can't see it. Not too long ago, I was in a shuttle. I was about to get on a plane, so we parked in a lot. We'd take like a 10-minute shuttle ride to the lot. And we get into this shuttle with a bunch of other people, and there's a driver who's from a different country, and people are just barking at him the whole time. You know, one person's yelling about what it feels like in the van, the temperature. Someone else is upset because we're going to be late, or we're taking too long, or which way we're going. Everyone in the van seems kind of annoyed with this driver, right after they've thrown their bags at him, you know, so he could load them in the back. And we get out, and as soon as we get out, my wife looks at me and says, could you imagine what it's like to be that guy? And I'm thinking, who? What guy? Right? Because I'm in my own little world. I'm thinking about what I need, where I'm going, how much time I have to get on my flight. We are just blind to how unnatural it is for us to stop and feel for other people. We are blind to our lack of mercy, to our lack of empathy. You might be surprised to know that the person who made your coffee this morning is struggling with an addiction. Or maybe the person who checked you out in Target last night just found out that their loved one has a terminal illness. Or maybe the person that sits across from you at work just lost somebody they love. Or maybe your teenager struggling with a sense of inadequacy that you have no idea. But we're in our own little worlds. And we need to be intentional about stopping, looking, putting ourselves in the shoes of other people because we are blind. We are blind to our lack of mercy. The other reason we don't show mercy is because we're right. We're right. The thing that's been messing with me a little bit with this story is that, think about this. If you take the king out of this story, if you take act one out of this story, and you're left with a man who loans money to another man, never gets paid back, and then does something to try and get his money back, the man's not wrong. We hear of that all the time. If I just told you that story, you'd be like, man, that must stink. It was nice of that guy to loan out his money. He never got it back. He's right. He's right. He's not wrong. But what if Jesus didn't come to show us what's right, but came to show us what's best? What if he knows that being right is destroying our relationships? What if he knows that all the arguments we have in our marriages are because somebody is fighting to be right? What if we've broken friendships, broken relationships, because we're right? And what if Jesus isn't as concerned about us being right in the argument as he is about us being right in the relationship? Maybe there's a person that you work with and you can't stand them and they get under your skin. And when it push comes to shove, you know in your mind it's because they do something that you don't think is right. Right? Or there's an issue and you're right and they're not. And you can hold on to that. And maybe you are right. But maybe Jesus knows that eventually that feeling of being right is going to put you in a bad mood on a regular basis. Eventually it's going to turn into a sense of anger. Eventually that's going to turn into a sense of bitterness. And eventually you're going to start coming home to the people that you love angry. Why? Because you're right at work. And now there are people in your life that are suffering for it. And what if Jesus knows that and so he just says, look, just let it go. Let it go. What if he knows that you are sacrificing so much joy for the sake of being right in the arguments you have with your spouse? What if your marriage could totally transform if you just stopped and said, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about who's right. It's about us being right. I'm speaking to myself here too. Jesus came to show us not what's right. He's not so concerned about us being right. He came to show us what's best. He wants us to be right with people, not right in arguments. But once the king enters the story, what's amazing is that there's now universal outrage. It's like, it's almost like we've been hardwired to feel like mercy should produce mercy. That's why everyone in this room, when we first heard the story, we're like, wow, that was messed up for this guy not to show mercy after he was given so much mercy. Once the king enters the story, it changes everything. It changes everything. That's the story of the gospel. The good news about Jesus. It's why there's such good news. It's because he looks at us and this incredible debt that we owe. In the midst of our imperfections, the mistakes that we make, the things that we struggle with over and over and over and over again, the bad habits that we try to break and can't break, the things that frustrate us, he looks at us and cancels the debt and doesn't let us accumulate any debt beyond that. In one of the epistles in the Bible, it says that he took the record of our debt and he nailed it to the cross. Like, just that's it. That's the end of it. It's as if Jesus looked at us in our desperate state and said, even though I'm a king, even though I don't know what it's like to owe anybody anything, even though I've never wronged anyone, even though I didn't need to come down from heaven to be with you, I stopped and I felt for you. I took a walk in your shoes. And I paid your debt. I felt for you. That's the story of the gospel. And maybe you need to know today that Jesus didn't just feel for us when he died on the cross for us, but he feels for us on a regular basis. The things that are keeping you up at night, that are hurting you, he feels for you. He is deeply concerned about your day-to-day routine. He is deeply concerned about the things that deeply concern you. Why? Why? Because that's the kind of king that he is. Not because we've done something great, not because we've earned it, but because that's who he is. Here's the story I'll leave you with. Recently heard about this guy, his name was Steve. It's a true story. Steve was sitting down one day for lunch with a pastor, and we were talking about forgiveness, and Steve said, no, you don't understand, God can't forgive me. And he said, yes, he can. You know, God forgives completely. And then Steve began to tell a story. And years ago, Steve was happily married until his wife cheated on him with somebody that he doesn't like. And from that point on, Steve's life just began to unravel. He developed a deep sense of hatred for this man who had taken his wife. And this had caused him to make one poor decision after the next, after the next, after the next. Eventually, this lack of forgiveness was ruining him, ruining him. At one point, he assaulted a police officer. And he was put on trial. And his wife and her new husband, that man that Steve hates, they were sitting there in the courtroom. And the whole time, the man was just staring at him. Eyes locked on him with a smirk on his face, happy to see Steve where he was. Eventually, Steve was convicted. He was taken out of the courtroom, and on his way out, the man looks at Steve and he gives him the finger, flips him off. So Steve is telling the story to this pastor, and he says that was 19 years ago. And I'm going to see that man today. I'm going to see him and I'm going to see my ex-wife. He said, wow, what are you going to do? And he said, I have a pistol strapped to my ankle. And when I see him, I'm going to shoot him. He said, I'm 63 years old. I don't have much longer to live. And I'll probably spend the rest of my life in prison. But I'll have health care. I'll have 3 meals a day. And I'll be fine. It'll be worth it. This parable that Jesus tells, it ends And it says, in his anger, talking about the king, the master handed him over to the jailers, this man who wouldn't forgive. He handed him over to be tortured until he should pay back what he owed. There's a lot of discussion about what exactly this verse means. It doesn't mean that God is going to torture you if you don't forgive people. But what I can tell you, and what we can take away from it, what Jesus wants us to know and what he wanted his disciples to know, is that the person who pays the greatest price for your unforgiveness is you. The person who pays the greatest price for your lack of mercy is you. You can see that in Steve's life. His whole life had unraveled. Now look where he was going. And so my question for Steve, question for you, for me, is how long? How much longer do we let this go on for? If you look at Steve, his unforgiveness, his lack of mercy, he had been wronged, but that was 19 years ago. And instead of letting it go, as difficult as that might be, because no one wants to forgive someone who takes their wife, but as difficult as that might be, maybe his whole life wouldn't have unraveled because of that lack of forgiveness. And now, after all this, right, he's now going to allow that man to determine where he spends the rest of his life. All because of unforgiveness. So how much longer is he going to let unforgiveness ruin his life? How much longer is he going to pay that price? And for you, for me, what I would ask you is how much longer? How much longer are we going to insist on being right in our marriages? How much longer are we going to allow that wall to stay up between us and those relatives that we don't like to talk to? Why? Because they do that thing and they shouldn't and we're right. How much longer are we going to allow that relationship at work to be where in the way that it is? How much longer are we willing to pay the price for unforgiveness? Or can we start living like there is a king in our story? Let's pray together. God, you love us more than any one of us in here can grasp. And you have forgiven a debt that is greater than any of us will ever realize. Would you allow your mercy, your love to take deep root in our hearts so that it seeps out of us? Would you allow us to know and remember in those moments when we're tempted to hold grudges, would you remind us of how much we've been forgiven, how you feel for us, how you love us and want what's best for us? And would you give us the grace in those moments to forgive like you've forgiven us? In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.